Do you feel like sometimes you might be in your own way when it comes to your dating life? And maybe you've just become so jaded and just hurt from the fucked up world that is dating? Well, if you do, I highly recommend Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, which is a lecture series, fuck my life, which is a lecture series that you can get on Audible. To me, her research and vulnerability is so powerful, and it honestly helped me bring down a lot of my walls and barriers. So I suggest you check it out. It's a 6-part lecture series that you can get on Audible. If you use my promo code, you can try Audible for a month free. That's audibletrial.com/51stghosts. And make sure to check out the wide variety of the hundreds of unmatched titles that Audible has to offer. Hi guys, welcome to 51st Ghosts. I started laughing because I almost said 51st Podcasts.
We'll today, get it right after 100 times.
Right, we'll get it right. Today I have with me musician, motorcyclist, motorcycle enthusiast, Alma Sever. Siever. God fucking damn.
I actually like Sever. Sometimes I go by Sever.
Oh, really?
So let's just do Sever.
Okay.
Because it sounds cooler.
The art is firmly known as...
Yasmin.
God, no. We're going by name. Yasmin, everybody. Yasmin.
I'll just start over again.
No, this is fine. Today I have Alma with me, and she actually also is the composer of the music that you just heard leading in to this podcast, and probably in the Audible promo that's before this podcast. Make sure you get your free trial today. Me. So Alma, do you want to start off with like a story or anything?
I have so many stories, but I don't know where to begin.
What would you say is your craziest, wildest first date experience?
I'd say when I first came out to Los Angeles from Colorado, I got on Tinder to make friends. And this is the only person I've ever met through Tinder. And we started chatting, you know, whatever. She was really pretty. And as a musician, I was like, I want to check out all the jam scenes. So I looked up jam nights in Los Angeles. And I was going to one anyway. And she decided to meet up with me. And it turned out to not quite be a typical jam night that I was used to in Colorado. Because a jam night out there means you show up with your instrument and you sign up on a list, maybe, and you try to jump up on stage and play. So this one, I roll up. I don't see any instruments. I see like a guitarist and a drummer on stage. Turns out to be a comedy night. And there's like all these, it's like an open comedy night with a little bit of music with the band. And she comes in, she's looking gorgeous, and she doesn't stop talking the whole time. And we're sitting in the back, and I'm white, and so is she. And I kind of realized, like, oh, we're the only white people, and there's, like, a few hundred people here. Which right away, I'm like, be respectful. I don't know. Especially coming from a very homogenous population, like Boulder, Colorado. I was like, this is cool. This is tight. So we're sitting there, and the comedians are coming up on stage, and every single stand-up comedian sees these two white chicks in the middle of the room and just, like, tears into us. And it's hilarious, but, like, you know, it makes me self-conscious. And this chick that I'm on a Tinder date with that I've never met before is talking to me the entire time about nothing and doesn't realize, like, we're the butt of every joke. So finally I was like, I gotta get this girl out of here because she's super hot, but, like, she keeps talking and I gotta get out of here.
Yeah,
so we get out
of
there.
It's rude to talk during people's sets.
Yeah, like especially at a comedy show. There's one person on stage talking. So we leave and, like, she keeps talking about nothing. Like, I don't know. I've never met someone like that, like an Instagram model. I'm from Colorado. I'm the only lesbian within 100 miles. And here I meet a lesbian that, you know, looks like a chick. So we're walking down the street, she keeps talking, I tear her out of this horrible situation. I was staying at an Airbnb, I think, and she just kind of, I'm like, yeah, it's getting late. after we go out and get something to eat and do all this stuff, and she just kind of keeps following me there and just doesn't leave and keeps talking. And then we get there and we're sitting on the couch and we're talking and she just doesn't leave. We're not like connecting on any level. And then she sleeps over and we both late on two separate couches. And then we get up and she leaves. And that was a very awkward, interesting first and only Tinder date in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, that's not a great introduction. So not that Tinder is like the best in LA, I feel like.
It has nothing to do with Tinder. I think it's just the lack of a connection we had together. And it was a super weird.
Right. Well, I feel like there's so many levels of why it was weird. Because, like, I've definitely been on dates where you don't, like, connect. But normally, both people are aware that there's not a connection happening. And then you just kind of make the best of, like, the hour. And then you're, like, go your separate ways. But for her to talk constantly through a stand-up. Because we just went to that comedy show last week. It was a week ago today, right? Yeah. And there's those two dudes who kept talking through all the sets. And it's, like, super obnoxious to have people talking while other people are talking. And it's just rude. I felt it was really disrespectful.
It was extremely rude.
And you're the only white people.
Yeah, we were definitely in a place of, you need to be quiet and respect what's going on. Also realize that you're the butt of every joke of every single comedian coming up there because they didn't hear the set before them. So they walk in and they're like, okay, what material should I have? Oh, two white chicks in the middle of the room.
You're like, clearly no one else has done that.
But that was, I was also, I think, me being so new to LA, which is a very different world, especially when it comes to the world of dating in a city like this, I didn't know what to do, really. And she's the first person I met, so I just kind of went along with it and didn't realize till later that it was really uncomfortable. I didn't want to be there.
It's interesting, and I feel like it's, you can drink out your beer. Okay. I just slurped water while you were talking. I was like, fuck. But it is.
And I drank a bunch of tequila and beer on before here. So I'm like, should I drink it? Or should I? Yeah, I'm going to drink
it. Perfect. I'm having water because I'm running on no sleep. I need Coke right now. Not that I have Coke available.
Here, go ahead.
Okay, so we were talking about dating. All right, guys. Dating.
Welcome to 51st, whatever the fuck this is.
I have no idea what I was just talking about.
Let's talk about Lars von Trier.
Oh, dear God, no.
Dating on Lars von Trier.
I know, interview sex. Him. He just has, like, a really quiet home life with, like, a wife that he's been with for 50 years. Oh,
we
met.
We love long walks on the beach and watching deers get murdered at sunset.
Yeah, we just have a nice, like, Tudor in the middle of, like, the forest with a bridge and, like, hanging deer carcasses in the back.
You just described every Lars von Trier movie. Maybe a little more porn is involved.
Well, he has a wife, so. I think where I was going with things, being uncomfortable in sexual romantic situations, it's really weird. I feel like I'm really good in pressured situations, but also when, like, really uncomfortable situations come up, I know I'll change gears and say things that I don't necessarily, not that, okay, so for example, I, in regards to, like, at work, either the tips are bad or we have a bartender who's taking from us. I had suggested to the bartender in question one night, why don't you transfer the tables, the tabs under you to the closing bartender? Because it was honestly becoming such a pain in the ass that we didn't know whose check was under who. And if one of them was gone, we couldn't log into their information. So a manager would have to go through all the stuff just to pull up a table. And then it turns out it's not even under that bar. You know, it's just like kind of a pain in the ass. What I would do is the mid, if like the next person comes in, I'll just put everything under them. I don't even have to close out really. And when I suggested it to him, he got really fucking weird. He was like, why would I do that? Why would I transfer him my as if I was asking a question that was either accusatory or something. So I was just like, oh, you know, make your clothes out faster. He's like, no, like, why would I do it? It's just like, it made me feel really weird. So I adjusted rather than being like, because it's a fucking pain in the ass and we can't get people's tabs because you go and you're gone and then you're on break and blah, blah, blah. So it's interesting how in those romantic or sexual dating situations,
you try to be accommodating.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I want to like diffuse this. I want to be nice, but then you look back on it and you're like, what the fuck was
going on? And then 6 months later, you're still dating, and you're like, What am I doing here? This bitch is crazy. Like, she's still talking.
If only that. If only it wasn't a joke.
Almost a literal.
Yeah, that was literal. If you guys listened to my whole podcast, the first half of Renee is about this said Tinder girl. Because I had to.
I like that she gets labeled under Tinder girl.
Tinder girl.
Could just be a girl you met at a bar.
Right? No.
I mean, I could tell you about Bus Cat Lady.
Bus Cat Lady.
Anyway, continue with.
We'll put pin in Bus Cat Lady. But basically, if you want to know, like, the experience I had with this lady, she's mentioned a lot in that episode because she probably literally didn't stop talking for 6 months. It's amazing.
Okay, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Do your parents listen to this podcast? Are we allowed to get sexual?
Or? Yeah, my parents don't listen.
Okay.
I've spoken to them about it.
Did she talk while you guys were hooking up?
Oh, we never hooked up. What makes you think that?
Okay. Oh, because she was talking the whole time.
Oh. But.
This girl, like, you know, when we're trying to be intimate, she would keep talking. She, from the moment I met her until, you know, she's probably still wandering around there, still talking. But yeah, this is
hilarious, like, but I'm confused as why did you think we hooked up? What, did she say something? Now I need to know.
Wait, you and the date that kept talking.
We're still talking about your Tinder date.
Oh, my Tinder date. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about your...
No, the first half of Renee is about your Tinder date.
Oh, my Tinder date.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Because that's when we had our big fight at the club, and I got really drunk because I had to take a shot to chill out, and that's why I hooked up with Renee and triggered everything.
Now.
So I felt like I built it up of, like, why, and I think because I was still recovering from the trauma of living with her.
Oh, yeah. So do we need to lay that down for listeners that, oh, yeah, that Tinder date?
This is how we know each other.
Yeah, this is how we fucking know each other. Oh, my God.
Yeah, such a weird world. Yes, yeah, so I met Alma's Tinder date. We'll call her Tinder Girl. Like, it's our superhero name.
Okay, that's Tinder Girl, I thought.
No, yeah. I met through a friend, and then you guys started doing her thing where she follows you around, and then... We met, so Alma and I met. How we know each other is through this person.
So in the end, it was a really great Tinder date because now I met you and all these amazing women.
Yeah, no, that is something that's actually really weird, is how many awesome people she knows, because there's a few people we've met through her, which is really cool. So you just have to find the silver lining in everything. Now, going back to Bus Cat Lady.
Bus Cat Lady.
Why is she called Bus Cat Lady?
So, Bus Cat Lady, I played in a band in Colorado, and I was on the way to a show one night, and I was taking the bus after work, because I work downtown, and while I was waiting at the bus stop, there's this girl, and she's smoking a cigarette, and at the time, once in a while, I would smoke cigarettes. Cigarettes are gross. Don't smoke cigarettes. And I asked her for a light, and we just started talking. And then she got on the bus, and I was like, she's kind of cute. So I chatted her up, and I was like, so I'm going to go play this show now. Because the one benefit of having the most miserable job in the world of being a musician is you get to hit on people and tell them to come to your show. And at least for one or two nights, they think you're really cool. So she came to the show. Next thing I know, I'm waking up at 4 a.m. in her bed, and her cat is sitting on my chest, staring at me, and then I turn over and Bus Cat Lady is staring at me with these huge eyes, and I'm like, what happened? Last thing I remember clearly is, like, bumming a light from you at the bus stop. And she kicked me out of her bed because she was like, hey, I live with my friend who's a professor and she has a kid, and I don't, you know, you don't feel comfortable being like, oh, this is my one night stand. I was like, I get it, girl. I'm going to get out of here. So I get out. I'm wearing heels, too, which is very rare. And I have to walk, like, 4 miles home without a bus because there's no buses running at this time of night. And I was like, you know, that was pretty cool because I don't think that's ever happened to me before. I kind of hit on someone and we go home. So I let it go. The next day at work... My manager comes to me and says, so this girl came in and was asking for you and she left her number. So my manager gave me this one night stand's number because she remembered where I worked. And so I called her and we ended up hanging out again. She came to a show and my bandmates like already labeled her bus cat lady because I told them how we met on a bus that night and how I woke up with the cat and I couldn't remember her name. And it gets to a point where if you don't know someone's name, like, you either try to figure it out somehow secretly or you just call them bus cat lady behind their back.
Of course, you can't ask. There's a certain point where you cannot ask someone what their name is.
Yeah, and if you've slept with someone, definitely don't ask what their name is. So bus cat lady came to my show that night and everyone's like, she's really nice, but she's like really boring. She just kind of stands there and just like stares at everything. And I don't know, she like kept coming to shows and be like, okay, my bus cat lady. And she was just bus cat lady. So I don't know if that counts as a date, but
wait,
you know.
Did you ever know her name?
I don't know her name. I have her number on my phone as bus cat lady.
Amazing. That's so funny. I don't know why when you started off the story, you're like, so I was taking the bus. I was like, a bus? That's a thing.
So a bus is this thing, has, I think, more than four wheels on it, and you pay money. It's like an Uber, but it's really big, and maybe someone's dead on it.
It's great. You might be able to buy some weed on there, or heroin. I think when you said bus cat, I was imagining the bus cat from Totoro.
I've never seen Totoro.
What?
It's going on the list.
It's going on the list. I cannot believe you haven't seen Totoro, and you like Japanese culture.
Yes.
So I watched Totoro as an adult, and my friend had never seen it before. We were like early college, so adult is used loosely. And when we were at the end of it, we're like, there is no plot. No plot. It's one of Miyazaki's like biggest first films. Anyway, we'll walk away from that awkward moment. So you said
shame.
So you said that you were like the only lesbian within 100 miles in Colorado. So did you date a lot in Colorado?
You know, thinking about it, I realized I didn't really date. I would meet some girls and I would meet someone once every couple of years that I connected with and then we'd be together. And I think the whole point of dating is you get to know all these different people maybe and I don't want to say settle, but you get to see what you like. And when you're gay or when you're a lesbian, and lesbians, you know, this is Los Angeles, a huge gay town, and lesbians have one night a week at one bar that a couple of them go to, it's really hard to meet girls. Imagine that in a small town. I didn't know any lesbians. I didn't really hang out with any lesbians. Yeah. So when you meet one or someone who's even a little bit gay on a bus, you take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, Orange County is basically the same way. Mm. So are most of your dating stories or like ridiculous encounters, are they mostly in Los Angeles?
I mean, I have some in Los Angeles. I have some in Colorado and Boston, and that's it. Maybe one in Albuquerque.
What's one of your Colorado ones?
Okay, we got bus cat lady.
Oh, I guess that is one.
Okay, I've got one. So this is another Tinder related one.
That's not your app.
Something my in the end I like to I haven't met anyone through Tinder that I've really dated or fell for, and I think that's because I'm really old school, and I hate that because I don't, you know, when you meet someone, you have a connection, you should go with that. But I really like how a relationship started, and I can't see myself going to my parents or something and be like, oh, we put some pictures of our tits and like said that we liked horses and we just really connected, you know? But anyway, I digress. Something my band would do, we gigged a lot and we gigged all over Colorado and all over the country sometimes. And to get people to our shows, because that's all that matters. No one cares about the music. They care about, are you going to get people to buy beers and buy tickets? So we would advertise all our shows on Tinder.
Interesting.
And I would advertise my shows. For a while, I did it both boys and girls, but then a lot of guys started coming to the shows and trying to talk to me. And I'm very accommodating, especially at a show, because I'm there to make people feel good. And I wouldn't come across as, like, gay or straight or anything. I'm there to play music and make you have a good night. So I was like, I gotta take the guys out of the Tinder and just the chicks. There's this girl who followed me on Tinder, and we talked a couple times, but she would come to my shows for months and never come and say hi. And I found out later that she drove by one of my shows, and she saw me out front, and she drove by. A couple months of this go by, and one day I'm like, she messages me, and I message her. I'm like, okay, I got a show. And she's like, I'll be there. At this point, I didn't know that she had come to a few shows already. And I can see her in the back. I recognize her. And she doesn't come up and talk to me the whole night. So I go up to her and talk to her. And she's really awkward. And she's not from America. And we connect. And I take her out. It's kind of extravagant to meet a musician in Colorado. Like, you get to go to parties. And especially for her, she'd never met anyone like that. So we connected. And we end up kind of dating for a while and going on some dates. And I found out later that she was, like, basically stalking me for a few months. And she was dating a girl, and she would, like, drive by my shows to see me. And I thought that was really flattering. Oh, no. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And later I found out, I was like, no, that's kind of weird. Just come and say hi. What was the original question?
Like a crazy or awkward or whatever dating story in Colorado, to see if there's like a comparison to LA, or like compare and contrast.
I think that's definitely a comparison. With we're kind of desperate out there.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw the word desperate around, but it's such a minority already. And then you go to a place when you're not in this huge city, and gay people and artists and queers and creative people flock to these huge metropolises. And Colorado, I lived in a town of 70 people at one point when I was running a music festival, and they don't tend to flock there. So you end up dating people that I don't think you should actually be with. Or maybe you don't have all these connections that people with a little more options should have. And coming to LA, I met so many women, and for the first time, I have lesbian friends, I have gay friends, which I felt in Colorado, everyone had dated each other, or you don't have that community you have out here. So you can have that community that understands you, but you can also have this big dating pool. And I can feel like a normal person for once and be like, you know, I'm going to date around a little bit. I'm going to go and grab a beer with some girl, or, you know, go to a club, and I can actually maybe try to flirt a little bit. That option was never there for me in these smaller towns.
Yeah, I agree. I know, I think we've talked about this. Some of the people in our friend group are like, LA has no lesbian scene anymore, and LA's lesbian scene is dying. And we're all like, well, we knew one lesbian from where we were from, and they're our ex. So it is nice, but I feel like on the opposite side, it's almost like there's never too many lesbians. That's not possible. But I feel like it's kind of what the problem is with the apps now, is there's too many options where people, like, we date like straight people in Los Angeles, which means it sucks. It's like there's too many people. We just keep swiping and swiping and swiping and swiping. We don't give people a chance because we just want to see what the next option is, just in case there's something better out there, which in some ways is a good thing, actually, because like you said, you end up settling for stalkers.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm sure she settled for me too. We're completely different people. I ride motorcycles and play guitar and violin and like to have a lot of fun and travel. And she's getting her PhD right now. She actually just moved to LA, which is, I found out she moved to LA. I was swiping on Tinder and I saw her and I was like, what the fuck? But we're just totally different people. And not just with what we do, but with our values in life. Just totally different people, but we sexually connected with each other, kind of. And we also, on some level, intellectually connected, but there's just this depth that wasn't there that I think we brushed over for such a long time.
Right.
And
because you're like, this girl's attractive and she'll sleep with me, so.
Yeah, and you just kind of go with that and wait another year and, I could go into that a lot more, how that was a very, I don't know, we really settled. She hated me. I hated her. But we still loved each other because we're like, oh, I'm sorry, we're so different. There's a community in Los Angeles. There's a lesbian, there's a queer, there's a gay community. And that can feel really small because that's what a community is. You know each other and you take care of each other. You hear about each other. But that doesn't mean that there's not this rich population of lesbians.
Yeah.
And because you're involved in the community a lot doesn't mean that you've met every lesbian in Los Angeles or in the world.
It's true. And I feel like there's also, I don't want to like be like, oh, men and women are different and blah, blah, blah. But
we're fucking different.
Yeah, it's different. It's, and even then, like, I know my gay guy friends, like, they're not meeting people they're gonna date when they go out, you know, on a Friday, Saturday night in WeHo.
Gay guy friends?
Yeah, you know, though it's not like you're gonna date that person you're hooking up with and, like, meeting those, like, people. Because I have a gay guy friend. He feels just as isolated as lesbians. So especially he works a 9-to-5. He works more like a 7-to-8. So he... 7-to-3.
So during the day?
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
I was like, Matt?
Not till 4 in the morning?
No.
Got it.
Early. He works early morning, so he can't go out during the week, and it's hard for him to go out. But that's the only option. And what's hard is that, like, you know, not everyone wants to go out and party every week. And I think that's why, like, the one night we have a week dies out is because, first of all, it's a Wednesday. I know everyone likes to think everyone's an actor or a musician, but a lot of people work 9-to-5s in L.A. Because I have tried to date people who have opposite schedules of me, and it's very difficult. But it's just, it gets tiring. Like, I don't always want to go out, especially with, like, winter coming. Like, I just want to be in a fire and drink pumpkin juice and, like, you know, do things that are inside and, like, low-key. Winter coming. We're in September in Southern California.
Winter's coming. I think this concept of you have to go out and go to the clubs to meet people. I'm looking back on every time I've met someone that I liked, or I've had a hooked up with a cute girl. It hasn't really. I don't go out to a club and meet someone. I really don't. Maybe it's happened 2 times, and it's. It's not that exciting. It's usually we're drinking a lot and we're kind of like, okay. But every connection I've had with someone or with dating has been through mutual interests or through friends. That's really the way to meet people, I believe.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was one friend who I did meet at a club, but it's like we met through people. So there's still the element of meeting through people. We just happened to meet at the club first. Because I agree, and I think that's the thing, is that, like, and I'm sure there's meetups for, like, lesbians and queer women and females who, like, you know, it's, like, Saturday afternoon. Like, we like to go hiking. Lesbians who hike. You know what I mean? Like, there's probably...
Lesbians like to hike.
I'm sure, yeah. I bet there's, like, a meetup group, and if there's not one...
There is. I've been on it.
Exactly. See? So there are multiple opportunities. It's just people... People want everything easy, and I think people also want the same. So, like, lesbians in LA who have been here for a while, they want their own bar. They want their own. They want multiple nights a week, which I'm not saying we shouldn't have it. One of the reasons why we don't have those is because economically it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So why do we keep going for the same thing? Why don't we create something new? You know, there's that lesbian brunch that happened, I think, today.
Yeah, I really want to check that out.
It's cool. I went last month, and it's just, like, the problem with the venue they picked is that it's kind of like a restaurant, and it's not like you can mingle with people. Like, that was the only thing. I mean, I got that one chick's number, and she was all like...
Okay, so there you go.
But,
that's how lesbians mingle.
Yeah, right.
See each other from across the room and stare a little bit, oh, and
she,
then, like...
She was peacocking. She was...
Spreading the feathers.
Yeah, she had her tits out, like, it was actually, like, I really enjoyed watching. I didn't go anywhere, but I was like, this is satisfying in and of itself. But it's like people want to recreate what's working for, like, or maybe not working, but what seems to be working for, like, gay men and we're not gay men.
It's 2018. I think we can accept that lesbians are different. We're not gay men. We're not heterosexual couples. We're lesbians. We like brunch and we like different things. And
yeah, we'd rather go to like something that's like a picnic at the park with a bunch of lesbians and come mingle.
Actually, just about to say a picnic somewhere.
Yeah, see?
Movie and a picnic or picnic and jazz. Nah, lesbians don't like jazz as much as I wish they would.
I love jazz.
I love jazz too.
You know, a lot of people don't like jazz. I don't know why.
Well, you know, a lot of people aren't as, you know, smart and cultured and tasteful as us, yes.
No judgment.
You don't like if you don't like jazz, then you're not a good person.
So everyone's like, it's an acquired taste. So I was like, I feel like you either like music or you don't.
Yeah. Jazz is, okay.
Well, anyway, we digress.
Yeah, that's our jazz podcast.
Every Friday at 4 o'clock, listen to 102.3 Jazz FM with the lesbians.
Okay. Dating.
Lesbian jazz.
Is there any other type of jazz? It's like really complicated and complex and like trying to be more than what it really is when they're really on the same scale, and all jazz is pretty gay, lesbian.
That's so funny. Actually, every single time I have brought, like, had sex with a girl at my place.
Gross. Sorry, continue.
I don't know why that was so funny. I always light candles and play jazz music.
Oh, yes. I want to sleep with you now.
But everyone seems, they all seem to like it. I think I usually play bebop. Because I think it's
Sure it's the candles and the jazz that really do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, because you already spent 3 hours of trying to see if you want to hook up with the person.
I mean, I'm sure Bus Cat Lady didn't put any jazz or candles on. I think she was like, here's my cat, here's my bed, let's go.
You deserve jazz and candles, Alma.
I think I deserve. I'm really trying to focus on myself. And speaking of candles, I met someone and they light candles every time we hook up and put some incense on. And it's really nice.
That's hilarious.
Maybe I'll work some jazz in there.
First of all, I definitely thought you were going in a different direction with candles. I thought you were going to be like...
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have a story. I don't know if it's a dating story.
That's okay.
If there's women together touching each other, that's date, right?
It sounds like a date to a straight
guy. Sounds like a date to me. So I was watching a movie with two lesbians. And then one of the lesbians was like, hey, I have some mushrooms. And I was like, okay, cool. And she was like, do you want to do some mushrooms? And this was a long time ago in college. You know, what happens in college stays in college. And so we all did mushrooms. And we attempted to have a threesome, but we just dripped hot wax on each other and it burnt the shit out of our skin. And then we went to sleep and that was it.
We tried, my ex and I tried wax. Like, she really wanted to try it.
There's a technique and an art to it.
There's also a special kind of wax you get. You're not just supposed to use...
just pour flaming liquid wax on someone's bare skin.
That's what happened to me. So my ex was like, let's try it. Who got the wax spilled on them? I did, of course. And she's the one who wanted to try it. And I was like, I like reacted as if someone spilled burning hot wax on me. Okay. And she was like, oh my God, like, what's wrong? I'm like, you just spilled burning hot wax on me. It fucking
You don't hurt. Realize that though, because in the movies, they're like, oh, I'm going to drip this wax on. Then you take this yes. candle and just pour it on them like a cup of water. Oh. Don't realize, like, this shit was on fire. It's just gonna burn. You think you're being sexy.
Oh, she at least drizzled it on me. So.
Oh, no. These girls just poured it all over me.
Yeah. No, yeah. So, for those of you listening, if you want to try the sex candle wax, there's a special kind of wax you can get. And you're after you light it, you need to let it sit for a little bit, okay. From what I've been told. So it wasn't just
that's
like,
just any wax.
That's any there. Wax that you're going to put on yourself.
Do they just put sexy wax on the candle cover?
I think it's probably something that either doesn't have chemicals or cools down quicker. I've never tried
can
it.
Can you eat it afterwards?
I'm sure there's some kinds you can.
Something that's edible about right. it.
Okay, so one time... So this is when my ex and I first started dating. We were trying to, like, try sex. spicy things. And
spicy things?
Sexy things.
Sexy things.
Yeah, okay. She was Latina. She was the spicy
thing. Oh, she's Latina.
So we're having like ice cream. Like we met over the summer. Like, oh my God. You know, that kind of thing. And I'm just laughing at myself because I was so fucking like dumb about it. But we're like, ooh, let's like drizzle like the melted ice cream with the chocolate syrup on each other, right? And so I just dumped the entire thing on her vagina.
That's a good, I mean, it's like a bowl.
Yeah.
And you're like, I want some ice cream. Okay.
And she reacted as if really cold ice cream was going down her vagina and her ass and just like was like, oh my God. And then it got it all over her bed because we didn't put a towel down. And she was like, you're supposed to drizzle it like sexily over me, not just dump it on
you. Just dumped a bunch of ice cream. Get it, girl.
This is where this podcast is going. It's like attempted kinky hookups that go wrong.
Which is like every time. I think I'm being sexy and then I usually hear like, ow, or what the fuck are you doing?
It's
okay. They so do... did you eat the ice cream is the question, or did you clean it up after that?
No, I think I tried eating it off of her. I remember getting it smeared on my face, but just like it wasn't working. It wasn't sexy.
How do you feel about food? Snacks. Snacks and treats. Let's not call it food. How do you feel about snacks and treats and hooking up?
I feel like there are certain things I'm down for. Like, you know, I don't know if we did this. I think I might have fucked up with the ice cream. But, you know,
putting... Of course, lesbians would be like, I'm going to eat this pint of ice cream off of you.
Right.
I eat it so much.
Like, I feel like... Pint of fucking ice cream. I feel like, you know...
Just turn it upside down. Give it a knock. Oh. Just a pint on her
just
stomach.
Just like Rocky Road. Yeah. Right in the vagina.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
But I feel like there's certain things that do seem sexy, where it's like drizzling, like, you know, if I were to put like chocolate on her breasts or like whipped cream or like, I think the cliche stuff. I don't think I want to eat sushi off of a girl. Like, you know, I feel like there's...
What about sashimi?
No, I don't think I'd want meat involved. We joked about pasta, you know, putting pasta on her, but...
Like a noodle.
No, like pasta, like with the marinara sauce.
Smeared sounds like another candle incident.
We did a
pot of burning hot marinara. Meat marinara. There's certain sexy things like figs, I've realized, are very sexy.
Yeah, and like strawberries.
Raspberries.
Yeah, like berries, I feel like it could be good. Yeah, are you eating it like together? You know, like it's like you take a bite and it's in your mouth and she eats it, or are you like putting like raspberry jam on her ass?
Or like just pouring some ramen on her? I think we're hungry.
Where is this going? Have you, what kind of food have you eaten off girls? What's like the most entree like food?
Most, I think it's, yeah, it's been limited to fruits and berries. Yeah. Most recently, some figs and a couple raspberries, a piece of chocolate shoved in the raspberry.
Interesting.
Out of their mouth.
Because I feel like, but this, okay, so this goes against my meat rule. Because I don't, because I just don't think, I mean.
Just think of, I'm sorry, I'm going back to the, a steak.
Oh, I was thinking of like prosciutto on the pussy.
Oh, I love prosciutto and I love pussy.
So it should be good. But then the girl who had the prosciutto on her pussy is dealing with the fact that prosciutto.
She's like, you're eating prosciutto. Prosciutto pussy.
Pussy prosciutto.
Prosciussi.
Prosciussi. But like a charcuterie board is like really sexy.
I mean, yeah? A woman's body is a charcuterie board. That's how I treat it.
Just like nibble at it.
Yeah, there's like, different plates. Okay, so like. Figs. But yeah, I had fresh figs the other day, but like what do you call them, raisin figs?
Like dried
figs? dried figs go over here.
Yeah,
some cheeses here. Here's the prosciutto.
I do feel like, honestly though, I do think you're onto something, like metaphorically, or we can say literally, a woman's words.
God, don't say literally. Unless you literally mean literally. I will strangle you.
Woman's body
so
is...
figuratively a charcuterie board.
Because in order for, like, a female body to, like, enjoy sex, you do have to take your time with it and enjoy it in pairings. And I think that a lot of straight guys think that, like, a woman's body is, like, hot dogs during, like, an eating contest, where it's just, like, just get it done as fast as possible. Just get in there as fast as you can. Get it wet if you have to and shove it down.
Yeah.
That's
not how that works.
No, it doesn't. And I think that's, like, why, because, you know, whenever I'm like, yeah, like, I feel like when I have sex, it's usually for like an hour and a half or something. And I feel like
you have to let the engine warm up before you just drive it across the country.
Right. And the way straight people react to it is when I think straight girls are jealous, because they're like, who has time for that? I'm like, I'm sorry, you only have like sex for 2.5 minutes. But honestly,
straight girls.
Dude, the first time I heard, like, when everyone kept joking about, like, oh, straight girl, like, sex is 3 minutes, I was like, but really, is it? And then I saw, like, a chart or something, and I sent it to, like, a group of lesbians. I was like, and some of them have been with men. They're like, yeah, that's real. I was like, oh, my God. That's why all these straight girls are so uptight and bitchy.
Man, it would save so much time if we could just chuck it in and chuck it out. Sometimes it's like, sometimes you just want to get it done.
Yeah, but I also think that, I think straight people think when we say, and maybe you can tell me if you mean it differently, but when I say, like, we had sex for 1.5 hours, it's not like I was penetrating her for, like, 1.5 hours straight, you know? It's like...
I penetrated her for...
for 19 minutes.
For 90 minutes. And it was phenomenal.
It was great.
And then we cried and talked about our fathers.
But you know what I mean?
That's actually like, what lesbian sex is. Okay, so.
But I feel like, you know, 1.5 hours is the warm up, going through it, taking turns. You know what I mean? You have to take a break at some point because you're going for 1.5 hours. It's like cardio. Right, and then you get the figs and the champagne and strawberries, which actually pair really well together.
I think I had rosé for the second time in my life, paired with the raspberry and the fig and some crackers.
That's the most, like, lesbian sex food I've ever heard in my life.
Rosé. Rosé is a real thing. I thought it was, like, I didn't think rosé was a real alcohol.
Hi, welcome to LA. I was like,
there's white wine, red wine, there's whiskey, and there's tequila, and there's beer. And then everything else is just bullshit. And rosé, like, can be... Okay. No, my mind was blown by the rosé. Let's just say that.
It's so funny. Such a foreigner. We're in Colorado.
In Colorado, we just drink whiskey and IPAs, and that's how we go.
Yeah, because there's also blush wines, and then you can blended wines.
Blush? Are they pink like rosé?
Yeah, like a white Zinfandel. But rosé, it's its own thing. I was in France. I think it was after college. And there was, like, an entire, like, 5-foot shelf, two things, of rosé in the grocery store. I had no idea that was such a thing. Okay,
well, if they do that in France, then maybe I'm more into rosé.
Yeah, because when I was in, at the end of college, I think it was, like, not really a thing. Like, rosé has taken off a lot, I feel like, in the last, like, 4 or 5 years. Like, rosé all day.
How fancy is frosé?
Not fancy.
Okay.
It's frozen wine.
It's not back in. Well, I don't know. I thought rosé was just wine with some pink stuff in it.
No, it's, I think it's, like, the berries are, like, not, because, like, the way they're ripened. Hmm. Different berries, you know, it's, like, in different climates, they grow differently, and it affects the tannin in them and the thickness of their skin. That's why, like, a Cabernet is a different color for the Pinot Noir. So, like, rosé is, like, a certain kind of grape, the way it's grown. And, like, certain wines, like, the grapes are picked early and stuff. It's a whole thing. Hi, hire me. I'm a bartender. My dad actually told me that in the 70s, frozen rosé was a thing, like, frosé. He was like, you think that's new? And I'm like, first of all, father, you drank rosé. It's like, he's like this, you know, Iranian fucking engineer, jeans and like a goatee. He looks like he would ride a motorcycle. We got way off.
We were talking about lesbian sex earlier, and now we're talking about rosé from the 70s. God, this is a lesbian podcast for sure.
I know, like how you're earlier, you're like, hey, when like two chicks are like just talking about shit.
Yeah, no, that's what's going on right now.
But it is interesting, though, how, because they're aphrodisiacs, right? Certain foods do have, like, arousal components, like strawberry and I think chocolate. Because, like, it's a completely different feeling if you're drinking beers versus having, like, a glass of wine.
Yeah.
It just all has a different connotation. And I think that's why, like, a charcuterie board is sexy versus, like, you know, having some burgers isn't. You know, just imagine someone laying on their side, and you know, like that pose Burt Reynolds did on like The Lion, but like there's a chick there and just like dripping a burger. It's like a Carl's Jr. ad.
You're trying to make it work. It just doesn't.
No, it just doesn't work. But if he did it with a fig, it's sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, where do I go from here? Where can I possibly go?
How can I go from the burger back to the body charcuterie board? Okay, so Iranian. The girl that I talked about earlier was from Iran.
Oh, it's that one?
Yeah, that was the one. The one that kind of, she didn't stalk me. She just, I think too, speaking of your father who's Iranian, you're Persian, it's illegal to be gay in Iran. Mm. When I say illegal, I don't mean they're like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You get a ticket. I mean, this is legally, which just blows my mind because we can't imagine that here. I looked it up, and in Iran, you get 100 lashes on your first offense for being gay, and your second offense, you get hung, publicly hung. And Iran has the most executions of any place in the world. And this girl is from Iran, and I think that was a huge indicator of why she, like, kind of followed me for a while, and it was just so different, and everything was very hush hush. I thought I'd throw that in. I don't want her to just seem like some crazy girl that stalked me. Like, she came from a place where, like, you're not allowed to have those feelings for women. So,
yeah, well, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Because what I was actually going to say,
cut and edit it and put it back.
No, we'll just circle back to it and, like, people have me on conversation. Yeah. But I was going to say, it is interesting how and I think you have a really, really high tolerance for weird people. But it is interesting how, like...
I mean, why do you think I'm on this podcast? Yes.
But it is interesting how somewhere, like, in... You said Boulder?
Boulder, Colorado, yeah.
Someone doing that, gay, straight, whatever, going to a couple shows, checking someone out, your reaction is like, oh, that's kind of sweet. Because if someone did that in L.A., no one has the fucking time to do that. It's a feat to get somewhere in this city, you know, to go out of your way to do it. If someone
There's so did, much going on out here.
Yeah, that would be alarming if someone did it in Los Angeles. Like, if someone showed up to your shows and never told you and they're going out of their way to drive by you, like, they're probably driving 25 minutes to hopefully see you for 10 seconds. It is interesting how location is different. But yeah, the culture thing is really interesting. I mean, that was, like, the hardest part about coming out for me, as being Persian.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, this girl, she's the only person I've met that came from a place where, I mean, everywhere culturally, it's not okay. But coming from a country where they actually literally will murder you for it, I can't imagine what that does to you psychologically. Something as fundamental as love and your sexuality, when that's just, it's just not allowed. And I can't imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my father and his family, they're mostly over here because of the revolution. So when he lived in Iran, it was a Western country. It was still like the 70s.
Yeah. So, you know. My mom went to Iran before the revolution, and she's like, yeah, I was wearing bell bottoms and going to clubs. And then, like, a year later, you have to wear the hijab, and all of a sudden, you know, there's no more discotheques. It was crazy.
Yeah, because they had tons of clubs. It was the Paris of the Middle East. And so my father was in the U.S. when it happened. So he didn't necessarily grow up with it. It's one of the reasons why we identify as Persian and not Iranian. Because, like, I've had people be like, oh, why you do that? Persia doesn't exist anymore. But it's a way for us to not identify with the Islamic regime that's controlling the state. We can still, like, be like, this is our heritage, this is who we are, we're Persian, but we're not subscribing to that bullshit. Because most people over there, they don't want Ahmadinejad in power. Like, it was super rigged, you know? Because people don't know this, like, women go to university, they can't get jobs after, really, but they go to university, they actually really like the U.S. and they don't treat non-Muslims poorly. They treat Sunni Muslims poorly and Kurdish people poorly. Mm-hmm. But they like Jews, they like Christians. It's very skewed.
But they don't like Israel.
I mean, okay, they're definitely okay with Christians. But there's so many, I think I threw in Jews just because there's so many Persian Jews in the U.S., like just in L.A. So a lot of people like to pit them against each other. But as states, they're probably, they got, you know.
You know what they call Los Angeles? Tarangelis.
Tarangelis.
Yeah, because there's so many, the most Persians in the world next to Iran are in Los Angeles.
Yeah, they are. They came here because of the climate. It's really similar.
And I think also Persians have this, there's this cliche, but there's truth to it, and they take pride in it from what I've experienced. They like the gold and the flash and trying to look your best and smell, wearing lots of perfume.
Oh, yeah, Persians are gaudy as fuck. I can say that because I'm Persian.
Yeah, you're allowed to say that. I'm German, so I shouldn't even be talking right now. I should just be locked in a cage somewhere. Culturally. But no, LA, you can really, you can let your flag, your beauty flag fly. Yeah. I always say let your freak flag fly. But then it comes out, let your freak fry.
Yeah, well, also that's, finally enough, I think why Persians also fit really well into the gay community, because during the Pride Parade, I saw two Persian floats. There was Persians. It was really funny. Some dude had a sign that said gay Persians are the original bears. And then
there you go.
Yeah. And then there was like Persian parents like in support. And it's because like gay culture is really flashy and Persians are really flashy. Like literally I was at cousins' birthday parties. They're like turning six and the women were like in gowns, all these jewels, perfume, and it's like a six-year-old's birthday party.
Okay, speaking of that, that makes me think, that makes me a little more understanding towards the Abbey on Saturday nights.
Why it's all like Middle Eastern men?
Yeah. And maybe it's because of that. I always thought, some people say, women, lesbians say it's because they just, these men want to come and try to convert the women. I'm like, well, it's mostly Middle Eastern men from my last few experiences. And maybe it's because the gay community just were a little more flashy. And they're like, this is my kind of club.
Yeah, that's...
But then you have a lesbian bar full of Middle Eastern guys, Persian men, and...
Yeah, because they can also be, like, aggressive. So that's the thing, too, where it's, like, out of the 20 Middle Eastern men, maybe one of them is straight. And because one of them's acting like a straight jerk, they just are like, all you dark men look the same, and you're all assholes.
Actually, one guy kissed me on the cheek, and when he brushed away, there's a smear of brown makeup on the side of my face.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Well, and that's the thing too, is Persians are very affectionate, and we're very like, you know, you kiss each other on the cheek, like touchy. So there's like, you know, even when my cousin moved here from Iran, you know, the way she would speak in text was like so like poetic and over the top, because we're such an affectionate culture that it's just like, she, and so the translation is like, so June, for example, I would be like, Alma June. It means dear Alma, yeah. Right?
And my Armenians call me Alma June a lot.
Yeah. And when it said, when you put in June, you're like, okay, great. But if someone's always like texting you like, dear Alma, you know, it's just kind of like, you're like, why the fuck are you like addressing me like this? And, you know, it's just like, it's odd, I think. So I think there can definitely be a disconnect if people are just really affectionate and kissing you and touching you and like speaking to you in these like, oh my God, you're gorgeous, you have this beautiful aura and stuff like that, just because that's our culture. So I can see like a little white lesbian at the club being like, why are all these like Middle Eastern men like,
well, I dated a Persian woman, and that was actually a big clash between us because we had such different affection. And it's a very respectful effect and ancient affection, I feel, that Persians have, you know, Alma June and Yasmin June, and it's respect. You're not all over each other. And with Americans, when we say hello, we give a big hug or like slap each other on the back. And I also am I can be touchy feely with my friends, and that would actually really bother her. She constantly would be like, are you, I mean, maybe this doesn't have that much to do with the Persian thing. But yeah, it got a little too much for her how affectionate she thought I was with everyone. Yeah. And I was just like, this is just how I am. This is how we do it. And
well, maybe coming from like current modern Iran, like, you know, her touching you in public is such a big thing for her that maybe her seeing you do that with something else, like that was something really special to her because she couldn't do that ever before. Maybe, I'm not saying you were you her first girlfriend?
Oh, no, she had a couple others.
Okay, so maybe it's just something she felt like was special and maybe she just didn't have people who were as affectionate before.
Yeah.
Yeah, being Persian, it's so funny that this conversation became about Persians.
Well, I think I've been thinking about it a lot because...
Just she lives here now?
I mean, yeah, and also, is this a very cliche thing to bring up? The language of love? Have you ever read that or heard about it?
Is it the one where it's like the 5 different love languages?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And like many people, I will quote it, but I've never read it.
Oh, yeah.
But I know the idea of it, it talks about how there's these different ways to show your affection towards people. And that was the one time where we just couldn't connect on showing each other how we cared for each other. And she constantly thought I didn't like her because of something or... I would be like, oh, you're being really hostile and like, hurting my feelings. But really, she was just trying to show me her affection in a different way. But I think a lot of it was because we're from not just two different countries with different language. There's tons of language barriers, but there's just so many. The cultural differences were this huge wall between us with communicating. And it came from like a cute come into the shows and, oh, I think you're exciting, you're on stage playing, to like, we just can't connect because of this. And that's really sad to think about. And
You know, I feel like, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I feel like that's one of the reasons why I gravitate towards mixed girls. And Jewish and Latina, mostly because I can never date a Persian girl again. I just know what their families are like and I can't handle it. But all those cultures, the brown cultures, are all similar. Like, it's the big families. Like, I mean, I was like 7 when I learned to lie about being full, because even if I said I was full, they would make me eat more food, you know? And there's just something about not just that culture, but being in between cultures that is not a lot of people can relate to. And I feel like dating someone who's mixed and has that mixture specifically of white and brown is something that, it's not like I'm going to go out of my way to like only date a mixed girl or something, but there's just something really appealing about it because they can understand a part of me that most people don't understand. So I get it. When you have like a cultural difference, it can be fun and exciting. But if it's something you can't get past, then it's like, because I even asked my parents about it recently because, you know, my mom's like white as fuck from Orange County and my dad's from Iran. And they're like, for them, it was seamless. They didn't even like think about it when they were together. It was just learning about each other and trying the food and like getting to know each other. For them, it just worked. Funnily enough, they had no idea my like bend it like Beckham struggle. But I brought it up and then I like let it go really quick because I didn't want them to feel bad about it. But I was like, no, I'm very much a mixed person, guys. But it is interesting where it worked for them and they were able to communicate in ways that their cultures became me, you know? Mm-hmm. Like my culture is a mixed culture versus for other people just doesn't work. And then they have their own personal issues and other things going on that make it
difficult. I think that too. There was the cultural aspect, but when it comes down to it, it has to do with two human beings connecting with each other.
Yeah.
And you can try to break it down to oh, there are language differences, or they're an engineer, I'm this, or cultural differences. But I mean, I've dated people that are very similar to me and their desires and their our intellectual compatibilities, and it still doesn't work out, and there's no magic thing.
Yeah. Have you ever been in any situations where like communication or lack of communication has just turned it into like a wild, crazy thing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to keep mentioning the same person because we're actually friends now and we care about each other, but it wasn't lack of communication. It was just we couldn't communicate. Mm. which was so sad because we both knew it. We both knew, like, we would just never understand these things about each other.
Yeah.
And we wanted so bad for it to work. And it's heartbreaking when you care about someone, but you're just like, we're so fundamentally different about our values and life, and that we just, it's not going to happen. I mean, I'm trying to get, okay, here's one example. I don't even know if I can say that out loud because it sounds horrible, but it really is. There's between a cultural barrier and a language barrier. We were at a bar once, and she thought that this bartender was being racist. So she responded by being extremely rude. And it was the end of the night. He was about to close the bar. And he's like, you know what? Can you just, you can't be here. Just get out. We're closing down anyway. And she started screaming and yelling you're just a bartender. You're beneath me. My purse is worth more than your life. And she said that, and immediately in me, I was just like, uh-uh, you're not, you can't say that. You can't say, like, a thing is worth more than someone's life.
Yeah.
And that was where this whole barrier between us started because of this misunderstanding and unable to communicate that she was feeling super hurt. And she felt like this guy had been racist because he asked to see her ID. And she said, I don't know, she said something kind of rude when he checked her ID. He checked everyone's ID, but she thought he would just let her in or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just I've never had that feeling before where I see someone in this strange light where they just don't understand this, like, the world I live in.
Yeah.
And she started, like, screaming and yelling and saying she's going to sue them. And I'm a very, I'm non-confrontational. So I was like, okay, well, let's calm down now. And that led to this huge thing where we started talking about our values and fundamentals and morals in life. Because I was a counselor at a homeless shelter. I was really involved in the homeless community. And she would spend $1,000 on a jacket because it looked kind of cute, And we started, that whole night led to this conversation and values of human life, And it led to a conversation of, my life is worth more than, like, value monetarily, because she came from a culture where that's a huge thing. You'll spend every penny you have to try to look presentable and look good and fancy,
mm-hmm.
because that's what's expected of you. And then it was just all downhill from there. And it was so sad the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, that's good, though, that you guys were able to have that conversation, at least, because I don't know who I was having this conversation with about Persians literally the other day. Actually, literally. And
okay, not figuratively, literally. Not
figuratively, literally.
We're going to bring back the English language. Starts today on 51st Ghosts. So literally the other day.
I was talking to someone about Persians and stuff. I actually think it was last night. And I was saying how, because we were talking about Persian Jews and the girl was Jewish, kind of like the oxymoronic of being a Persian Jew. Because Jews are frugal, Persians spend their fucking money like it's going out of style. And people, I've literally seen these things in my, like, extended family who doesn't really talk to us anymore because they found out I'm gay. Which is fine. It's more like, you're welcome, family. But they would literally be like, bought something and they're like, well, I spent this much on it. And then they're like, well, I spent even more than you did. Where normally people are like, well, I got it at a bargain or I was able to save money. But to them, they wanted to be like, I actually spent like $5,000 more than you on the same thing. That makes me better, which it makes no fucking sense. Because my dad is super fucking frugal. I don't know where he got it from, to be honest. His immediate family, they don't dress flashily at all. They're all really frugal. It's his extended family that's, like, those people who, like, show up in, like, a gown with jewels to, like, a sixth grader's birthday party.
It's not just there's tons of Americans who say, oh, I spent $10,000 on this watch. And it's like, well, what?
Like, why?
This girl owes $200,000 for her college education. Like, fuck you, man. I don't want to hear about that. But some people, they're raised to think that's That's a good thing to talk about.
Money is a really weird thing when it comes to dating. Like, I don't want to say, like, social class, but when you date someone in a different, like, it's interesting dating someone that has, like, a different income or comes from a different, like, family background, because it's something where I feel like there's this, like, stereotype of, like, ooh, the person, like, who doesn't have as much money always wants to date, like, a doctor or something. Yeah. But I have found being the person with in the position of not having as much money is very uncomfortable. And then being the person who has the money is like, oh, my God, what are you talking about? Like, who cares? You know, like, so I went on a date. So I went to Catholic high school. So I was around people with, like, a lot of fucking money. Yep. And I, like, literally my high school girlfriend's, like, house looks like a Swiss chalet. It's ridiculous. And so I dated this girl after, like, college. We went to high school together. And I live, like, my parents have, like, a two-story suburban house. It's nice. I felt like I lived in a sardine can after I went to this girl's house. Mm. It was huge. I was like, oh, God, this is what it's like to date rich girls. I forgot. But then, like, my family was more well-off than my ex's family. And so she would feel uncomfortable about it. But I would be like, who cares? It's just money. Mm. So I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
Oh, but I've experienced all sides of it in the past few years from having a really, you know, I was a scientist and now I'm a guitarist. What do you do? I play guitar and I live in Los Angeles, one of the most expensive places to live. And I've been on all sides where I'm the one that's, you know, I've got a sugar mama or I'm the sugar mama. And it is, you can approach it and talk about it and be honest about it and try to be careful and just be like, hey, I know we're financially different, but please don't just pay for everything all the time.
Yeah.
If you really love someone, you have money, I know you want to treat someone right, but it makes them feel uncomfortable. You're constantly paying for everything and doing everything. And then it also gets uncomfortable when someone never wants to pay for anything. They just say, oh, well, you have money. It's like, well, it's because, girl, I work for that money.
Yeah.
But that's a dynamic that in any relationship you have to talk about. Whether it doesn't matter if you're both poor, you're both rich, or one's poor, one's rich, you have to talk about it to make it work.
Yeah.
And especially, yeah, a lesbian relationship, there's always kind of this, not a power play, but you're on an even keel. You're both women. You're both queers in this world. And you have so much understanding, so then you kind of want to, you're also, you don't have that heterosexual stereotype of, okay, well, the man has to pay for everything.
Yeah.
Which can be a big relief when you're just like, hey, man, just cover this.
I agree. I do think it's actually a lot easier when you're of this, I'm assuming gay men have a similar thing where it's like you're the same sex. It's like, okay, there's not an expectation. Like, we can just, and we can talk about money without it being, like, about our masculinity. You know, it's like, it should be like a little bit more easier theoretically. But speaking of when you were a scientist, do you feel like your dating life is different from your, because like that's a pretty dramatic career change.
Yeah, I mean, the people I dated when I got done with college and was working in just more steady jobs, it didn't feel so up in the air. And then trying to be an artist, it's so hard to try to pursue your dreams as an artist because you really have to try to make it, you know? If you're trying to be creative, create stuff out there that people like, you have to live this different lifestyle, and which can be really I think people can be drawn to it and think it's really sexy at first and different, but then when it comes down to it, it's not that extravagant. Trying to be an artist, you have to work really hard. You don't get a lot of positive feedback, really hard on yourself usually if you're an artist, and that's something that's really hard to date. Musicians, when do you work? When do you get gigs? You don't get done till 3 or 4 in the morning. Then you have to load all your gear out. Then every night you play a lot of the same songs, and you have a bunch of people yelling and screaming at you, wanting to talk. Who the hell wants to date someone like that? You know? And when I had a more normal life and more normal job, I could hang out on the weekends and have sleepovers and go out to dinner. And definitely my dating life changed a lot. And I used to be more drawn, to be honest, to more stable women who had jobs and we're on a career path. And now I'm kind of like, I want to date an artist and someone who gets the struggle and sees the world. And not the struggle. It's not always a struggle. It's really beautiful sometimes. But someone who understands that you're trying to create something and you live in this different world.
Yeah. I completely agree. I have never been a normal person before.
But yeah, no, I can tell. That's why we're friends.
But I was actually thinking about it today. I go into work and I don't hate it. Like, and that's been a while since, like, I've actually been, like, and I think it's also being an adult, too. You know, when you're in your, like, early 20s, you're like, oh, I don't want to go to work. I want to hang out with my friends. You're like, no, I need money, and that feels good, supporting yourself. But I realized, and it was the same when I worked New Year's, like, this past year, is I, like, don't ever want to date someone who works a 9-to-5 again. Just because, like, if you work a night shift, or if you work the weekend, or if you work a big holiday, like Labor Day or something, apparently people do things on Labor Day. I don't know. Like, what's a weekend? Never heard of it. You know, it's like, I have Wednesday off. It's just like, it affects me in a way where it's like, because I would like someone who has like a 9-to-5 mentality, because I'm too much of like a goose brain over here to like really function on my own. If I'm dating someone who has a 9-to-5 and I'm not working that schedule, it makes me sad, you know, because it becomes such a struggle when they want to go.
You never see each other.
Yeah, they want to
spend time together.
Go out and have a nice Friday night. And it's like, well, I'm closing, so we don't get to hang out. Or like, oh, my friends are doing a double date. Sorry, I'm closing. You know, it's like, I have to work this holiday. And it is, it's just sad. It's sad when you can't, because that person's sad that you don't, you know, it's just like, it's not like it's.
And that makes you feel bad when your whole life is built around trying to get your art going, get your, you know, going to auditions or making your podcast or your YouTube series or writing screenplay writing. That's a big part. It's good to be on the same page. And but not to say that there's some people who have careers in 9-to-5s that they get it, you know, and they thrive off of it. And I think those relationships can work really well, too.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes they're out there.
It is hard, and the right person can make it work, I think. Because you're right. I mean, like, when the idea of when people are like, ooh, dating an actor or musicians, like, they imagine dating someone who's established. Not necessarily famous, but someone who's taking them to parties all the time and doing gigs and, you know, which constantly.
I was that person for a while, and I took girls. I remember taking this one girl, and we went to this after party where there's, like, DJs and musicians, and, like, I was the cool musician chick, and she was, like, she was so smart, too. She was a nurse. Like, she was just so intelligent, hard worker. And she's like, you're way out of my league. But really, I was like, no, you're out of my league. Like, this is all shiny and fancy for tonight. But in the end, that gets really old. It's the same shit over and over again. And it's this struggle between, like, the crazy partying artist and, like, there's definitely, in the past few years, I've been having some draw to, like, the more stable life. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it's being an artist is a gilded life. It's like, on the outside, it seems really to, like, it does. It seems glamorous, because I was that person too. You know, I've taken girls to, like, premieres, and, like, you know, it's like you meet so many random people in the industry. Like, I've, like, been to, like, private speakeasies where, like, Metallica was just right before us and shit like that, where we're, like, partying in a beach house right on the beach. Like, weird stuff that, like, I would never do as a regular person unless I had people with money.
A regular person.
I don't know what that... Yeah,
I'm going to happy hour again on Friday.
Right.
For the rest of my life.
Is that being a normal person?
I think so. Happy I don't hour. Know. I'm not normal.
Happy hour and weekends? But it is, like, gilded. Because... And it's not necessarily, like, rotten underneath, to finish the quote, but it's just... It's also just having a job, you know? You gotta do shit you don't necessarily want to do, and you have to sit down, and you have to network, and you have to hustle, and you have to put... And, you know, it's just doing it on, like, a different schedule. Do we want to end on, like, a happy note?
Yeah, I feel like we got really dark. We should not have talked about really sad, horrific movies before we started this podcast. I go to dark places after I talk about Lars von Trier movies. I have a happy note I could end on.
Okay.
You know, I'm getting older. I'm not young, but I'm not old. I'm leaning on the young side, but entering old age. And I've dated a lot. and I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but something I tell myself a lot when, you know, you get your heart broken or something doesn't really work out is that there's 7.2, is that where we're at? There's 7 billion people in the world.
I think we're at like 9.
What the fuck? I thought we're at 7 billion the last time. So there's billions and billions of, sorry, I'm yelling, billions of people in the world, and there's so many amazing people. There's so much going on out there.
Oh, no, you're right. It's 7.6 billion.
Okay, it's 0.6. We've gone up 0.4 since I checked. We have so many people in the world, and you're going to constantly make new connections with people, and you're going to keep getting in the dating scene. You're going to try Tinder. You're going to try going to the Abbey every Wednesday night. Actually, no. If you're a lesbian, you'll go once every few months, and you'll get really excited about it and be like, let's go every week, support our community, and then you'll be like, I just want to stay home and watch Handmaid's Tale. But you're always going to meet some new amazing people, and just keep trying to get out there and find someone.
I agree, and I think for every shitty date and for every single time you get your heart broken, I know it sounds cheesy, but things get better and your heart heals, and it's like that one person who was shitty and made you feel bad is not the last person you'll ever meet if you just give it a chance.
And you'll be a better person for it. You'll learn more about yourself.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a good note to end on. I realized we didn't plug your stuff.
Well, I have this new song with me and my drummer, and we could end with that.
Cool. Do you have a website you can direct people to as well? I can put a link to it, but...
You can check out my SoundCloud, Alma Seaver, otherwise my new... Seaver Sever, otherwise my new project. We're still working on name. I'm also playing with The Black Noise, also known as Black Noise. We're playing at the Taste Goods Festival on September 29th in Long Beach. Broken Social Scene's going to be playing. James Blake, a bunch of amazing artists, and it's going to be an awesome festival, and Black Noise is playing there with Alma Seaver, so check it out.
Awesome. Cool. Well, if you're dating out there, good luck, because it's a ghost town.